The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times and the News and Observer. But before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we explore some conventional and some not-so-conventional travel topics. Now, our journey takes us from a well-known North Carolina city to outer space, to ancient caves, and finally, North Carolina's own Twilight Zone. Yep. We're going to begin with an article written for the New York Times, ongoing special series, 36 Hours. Now, this series features writers who explore well-known destinations in just over 2 days. Recently, writer Ingrid Williams and photographer Kate Medley decided to check out a North Carolina locale. 36 Hours in Durham appeared in the November 2nd, 2023 issue of The Times. So let us begin. And by the way, keep in mind that this all took place in Durham in mid-fall, okay? The evolution of Durham from a faded tobacco town to a diverse cultural and culinary destination has been years in the making. But the ongoing development of this central North Carolina city seems to have reached a new stage. The resurgent downtown area, long a transitional neighborhood with pockets of progress, is now brimming with new restaurants, boutiques, bars, and breweries. And while construction continues apace amid in the historic brick warehouses, tobacco factories, and textile mills for good and ill, visitors today have reason to venture farther afield to emerging hot spots in East Durham and the old Five Points neighborhood. This season, only the brilliant fall foliage can compete with all the terrific food, drink, and local color there is to discover across Durham, as residents affectionately call the dynamic Bull City. And among the key stops they list, the Nasher Museum of Art on Duke University's Central Campus. It presents rotating exhibitions, including a current exhibition curated by ChatGPT. Then we have the Saltbox Seafood Joint. It serves fresh seasonal seafood caught off the North Carolina coast, along with honey-drizzled hush puppies. Then we have the Mystic Fireman Distillery, a 22-acre bourbon distillery that offers a weekend tour and free tastings of the label's full range of spirits. Then you have the Velvet Hippo, a lively new bar serving fruity slushies and creative cocktails on a rooftop in downtown. Now we're going to start our 36-hour tour, and it starts on a Friday afternoon at 3:30 p.m. at the Nasher Museum of Art. And we are going to be visiting a campus museum. Anyone concerned that artificial intelligence will eventually do their job may be put at ease by the new exhibition at Duke University's National Museum of Art, Act As If You Are a Curator, which was organized not by museum staff but by ChatGPT, OpenAI's popular chat box. Through January 14th, the admission is free. The eclectic AI-generated exhibition spans Mesoamerican stone figures and Salvador Dali works selected from the museum's nearly 14,000-piece collection. Though many were mislabeled by the chatbot, as noted by Flesh and Blood curator. More cohesive is the moving and human-curated exhibition of photographs and collage installations from the artist Lyle Ashton Harris. This continues through January 7th. While on campus, a stroll through the nearby Sarah P. Duke Gardens, where 5 miles of serene pathways wind past magnolias, blooming roses, and a lake reflecting autumnal colors. Now, the Saltbox Seafood Joint is our next stop at 6 p.m., and we're going to be feasting on Carolina seafood. Fresh seasonal seafood caught off the North Carolina coast is the simple winning formula at Saltbox Seafood Joint, a restaurant owned by Chef Ricky Moore, who earned the 2022 James Beard Award for the best chef in the Southeast. What began as a tiny takeaway shack in the old Five Points neighborhood is now a spacious but still frill-free sit-down locale in Durham Chapel Hill Boulevard. Luckily, the menu hasn't changed much. You can still get heaping plates of fried oysters, blue crab, mullet, and clams with generous portions of fried potatoes and collard greens. My go-to is the fried catfish sandwich topped with a citrusy red cabbage slaw. It runs for $14. Then you have a side of hush honeys with that, and the chef's trademark take on cornmeal fritters is drizzled with honey, and that's $4 for the side dish. Now we move on to 8:30 p.m., and we're going to try a local beer by the fire pit. The competition's growing among the many craft breweries downtown, where out-of-town brewers like Asheville's Dissolve and High Wires Brewing have opened Durham tap rooms in an area that's already home to longtime local favorites like Full Stream Brewery and the Dirty Bull Brewing Company. But on a crisp fall evening, the most atmospheric place for locally brewed pint is easily Ponosaurus Brewing Company, a independent craft brewery with crackling fire pits and a leafy garden strung with lights. Try the tangerine-tinged Golden Rule Saison for $6 and a scoop of the house snack mixes like the pretzel and peanutty bartender's blend for $1. And allow me to share a photo here. Durham's downtown brims with new restaurants, boutiques, and breweries in his mid warehouses, tobacco factories, and textile mills. So you get an idea of what it looks like at night. Now we're moving into Saturday. We've left Friday, and we're going to head to the Bennett Place. It's 9:30 in the morning. We're going to take a history lesson. Swing by Monuts, a 9th Street bakery and cafe, to pick up a cinnamon and molasses glazed pumpkin spice donut for $2.50 and hot apple cider, a steaming blend of apple cider and chai tea for $5.50. Then we head out west for a dive into the North Carolina history. Beyond Civil War scholars, few are likely to recall what transpired at Bennett Place, a historic farmstead about 6 miles northwest of downtown. One of the few Civil War sites not associated with battle, this out-of-the-way landmark is where the Union General William T. Sherman and the Confederate General Joseph E. Johnston negotiated the largest troop surrender of the war, nearly 90,000 soldiers from the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida, inside the home of a local family in 1865. Began a visit in the small museum, where a short video explained the site's significance. Then you head across the lawn to tour the reconstructed farmhouse and surrounding outbuildings where the generals hashed out the terms. All of this is free, by the way. Now, on to noontime, and we're going to seek sandwiches in the east. Now, a former food desert, East Durham has emerged as a lunchtime destination for hungry diners from across the city. You'll know you've found Ideals, a sandwich shop that opened in 2021, by the line snaking down the sidewalk. Don't worry, it moves quickly. Here, freshly baked rolls, sesame-crusted hoagies, and rosemary focaccia are the foundation for superb deli sandwiches. Best is the Philly-style roast pork with provolone and garlicky broccoli robe, $8.50 for a half hoagie, and the thick-cut garlic and onion potato chips. They're $1.75. Another notable newcomer is Mike's D's Barbecue, a barbecue joint that opened nearby in July. You can go there for a brisket sandwich doused with the signature smoky sweet sauce for $10 and a side of smoked beans for $5 and sweet tea for $4. Next, we have the Mystic Farm and Distillery, and where they feature North Carolina bourbon. It's now 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Let's not lose track of time here. Whatever your preferred spirit, there's likely someone in Durham distilling it. Small production craft booze, from mead and cider to gin and rye, have exploded in popularity recently, and one producer worth seeking out is Mystic Farm and Distillery, about 6 miles east of downtown. Now, drop in at this bucolic 22-acre bourbon distillery for a free tasting of the full range of spirits, including the award-winning Broken Oak Bourbon and smooth cacao finished version made with cacao nibs from Raleigh's Videri Chocolate Factory. Now, small group tours are also offered on weekends. It's $20, and you need to reserve in advance. Now, it's 4 o'clock, and we're going to flip through some records and secondhand finds. Supporting small businesses is a point of pride in this fiercely loyal city, as evidenced by the growing number of independent shops downtown. Start on West Parish Street at the Durham Vintage Collective, an inviting secondhand boutique that opened in July, where you might find plaid miniskirts, leather jackets, or a framed Jean-Michel Biscuit lithograph. Across the street, explore Chet Miller, a well-stocked gift shop with Durham-themed throw pillows. And we also have small press travel guides, cookbooks from local chefs, and game night jigsaw puzzles. Right next door, Utopia Designed opened last year, selling exquisite Polish glassware and handcrafted ceramics. Scope out the latest color splashed exhibition at Ella West Gallery, a sunny space that opened in August, showcasing contemporary art from black, female, and other diverse and underrepresented artists. Then continue to East Main Street to browse vinyl albums of jazz, soul, rock, and bluegrass at Carolina Soul Records and at the new location of Bull City Records just across the street. Then we're going to have a little bull. Yep, 7 p.m., dine on fresh Mexican-American flavors. Downtown Durham, packed with great restaurants. But head a bit north to the old Five Points neighborhood where the city's latest hotspot, Little Bull, opened on a quiet block in June. The chef, Oscar Diaz, already well-known in Raleigh for his Mexican-American cuisine, again tapped his heritage when creating the playful menu. Highlights of a recent meal included crudo with North Carolina tuna, aguachile, wasabi, and flying fish roe, $18. Then we have plantain empanadas for $16, and soft dumplings stuffed with goat barilla, and a bowl of rich consomme for $16. And then we stick to the small plates as portions is generous and save room for dessert. The churro bars with chocolate saucer, $9, and they're divine. Now we have a corpse reviver. How about that? Now, this is 9 p.m., so we'll be sipping martinis in a former coffin shop. Yep, coffin, not coffee, coffin. At the end of 2022, the city designated most of downtown a social district called the Bullpen, where folks are permitted to walk around with alcoholic beverages purchased in the area. So if the bar is packed at the Velvet Hippo, that's a lively rooftop lounge that opened in August, serving fruity slushies and creative cocktails, you can take that frozen Hawaiian rum punch for $13 to go and then stroll over to Motoko Music Hall. That's a concert venue that also hosts dance parties, like a recent Taylor Fest for local Swifties. Now, you can continue to Corpse Reviver, a cocktail bar associated with the Durham Distillery, which opened in 2020, and a former coffin shop, and it serves dirty martinis garnished with bacon and blue cheese stuffed olives, all for $15. Well, it's Sunday, 9 a.m. in the morning, and we're going to head to Eno River State Park and hike along the river. Catch the season at its most colorful along the Eno River, where there are dozens of trails to choose in the Eno State River Park and in the West End on the Eno, a city park 5 miles north of downtown, anchored by the historic West Point Mill. Now, one scenic route begins at the mill, then climbs through the forest along the river, and you follow the yellow trail markers. After about 20 minutes, hop across rocks, crossing a shallow tributary to reach Sennett's Hole. Now, this is a natural pool and a popular summertime swimming spot, with small waterfalls and turtles warming themselves on the rocks on sunny days. 11 a.m., time to slurp some noodles to refuel after a hike with a brunch at Rose's Noodles, Dumplings and Sweets. This is a former meat market and sweet shops near Brightleaf Square that evolved into a casual East Asian-inspired eatery, serving fragrant bowls of beef pho for $17 and Thai rice soup for $14. The selection of cakes, cookies, and pastries is impressive, but best are the ice cream sandwiches that easily serve two. My favorite, the white miso flavored between chewy ginger snaps for $7. So there you go. Lots of good stuff to eat and have fun there in 36 hours in Durham. Well, writer Ingrid Williams is a regular contributor to the travel section of the New York Times, and she's also a former Durham resident who has reported on North Carolina since 2010. Now, from our tour of the Bull City, we're going to take a moment to ponder a rather challenging question posed in this headline. Science could finally discover aliens. Now, what does that mean? Well, I suspect there are some who would jump at the chance to meet an alien from another world, but you might want to hear what Adam Frank has to say first. Now, he's a professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester. and he recently published a book titled The Little Book of Aliens. Now, Dr. Frank's opinion piece first appeared in the Los Angeles Times and was also published in the November 5th, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. And with it was a NASA Getty image, and I'll read the caption. In this handout photo provided by NASA, a landscape of mountains and valleys speckled with glittering stars is actually the edge of a nearby young star, forming a region called NGC 3324 in the Carina Nebula on July 12, 2022. Captured in infrared light by NASA's new James Webb Space Telescope, this image reveals for the first time previously invisible areas of starbirth. Now we'll go to Adam Frank's article. Are we alone? Is life around us a cosmic accident that only happened once in this lonely planet, making human beings the only technological civilization anywhere? Or is the universe teeming with life, and perhaps even intelligence and self-awareness? Those are all questions. Well, these questions have haunted humanity for millennia. Science now poised to take a fantastic leap toward answering them. Over the next few decades, we will finally gain hard data that will help us answer our questions about alien life, but as we come ever closer to that milestone, another equally pressing question emerges. What would finding alien life or not mean for us all? Well, many people believe that answers about life in the universe will come from Earth's own skies via UFOs, or as our government has taken to calling them, unidentified aerial phenomena, or UAP. Now, recent years have seen the Pentagon acknowledging pilots' reports of UAP and creating a related office, Congress holding UAP hearings, and NASA launching its own study of the phenomena. This openness is good, and a true scientific inquiry will be useful to everybody. Now, scientists, however, have quite brutal requirements for linking evidence to claim as extraordinary as saying life exists beyond Earth. This kind of evidence science needs to link UAP to anything non-human simply does not exist yet. Earlier this year at a NASA panel hearing, a Pentagon official reported that only a small percentage of identified cases, and that's estimated at 2 to 5%, resisted conventional explanations such as balloons or aircraft. Some of the remaining cases just don't have enough data to begin formulating an explanation. Now, Earth's skies are simply not awash with alien phenomena. The stars, however, hold a different promise. Over the last few decades, the science of astrobiology, the study of life in its cosmic context, has exploded. We have discovered that most stars in the sky host a family of worlds. Many of those stars host a planet that orbits at the right distance for liquid water to exist on its surface, one of the prerequisites for life to form. All these distant worlds, called exoplanets in astrophysics, have transformed the search for life in the cosmos. We now know exactly where to look for life, and even more remarkable, how to look. Powerful instruments, including the James Webb Space Telescope, can peer into the atmospheres of these alien worlds to search for signatures of life's activity. Biosignatures include oxygen in the atmosphere that likely would not be there without life to produce it. Likewise, the combined activity of a technological civilization will imprint technosignatures and light from the host planet. I am the principal investigator of a NASA-funded effort to explore possible technosignatures. Our group, along with others, has already shown how industrial chemicals, artificial illumination, and even solar energy collectors produce technosignatures that may soon be able to detect with existing and planned telescopes. Now, people sometimes ask me how the discovery of alien life could matter if we don't have the chance to send a ship to collect a sample or meet and communicate with them directly. What exactly will change if we do find, through a telescope, scientific evidence of extraterrestrial life? Well, finding life of any kind beyond Earth would represent the most important groundbreaking discovery in human history. Life, unlike any other physical system in the universe, creates, innovates, and goes beyond itself. If you give me a star right after it forms, the laws of physics allow me to predict its futures billions of years from now, other than small details. With a microbe, on the other hand, we simply cannot say what will happen over billions of years. Evolution could yield something as weird as a giant rabbit that can punch you in the face. For example, a kangaroo comes to mind. Well, that remarkable creative power means that even a single additional example of life out there would simply imply likely that there are more examples. And if we allow for the possibility of other intelligent, technologically capable species, then it becomes truly impossible to know how far life can go. The discovery of even a single other technological society would also offer an island of hope in the turbulent ocean of our history. Research my colleagues and I conducted in 2020 showed that any civilization we find could probably be older than us. Finding an exo-civilization could show us that somebody made it, that long-lived, sustainable civilizations are something the universe does. And that means we might make it as well. Consider what happened for another major astronomical discovery hundreds of years ago, that the Earth revolved around the Sun, not the other way around. It turned out the Sun didn't come up in the morning, our horizon spun down. Even though nothing had actually changed in people's lives, the simple facts dethroning the Earth from its central place in the cosmos played a central role in rewiring humanity's understanding of itself, and it helped prompt the Renaissance and Enlightenment. Now, the search for alien life anywhere, no matter what its outcome, promises an even greater effect. Everything we understand about ourselves and the universe we inhabit would change. So, are we ready? By the way, Adam Frank is a professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester, and his book, again, The Little Book of Aliens, was published in November. Okay, so let's see. We're going to head now and talk a little bit about those who remain skeptical when it comes to aliens from outside Earth's orbit. Space exploration may one day provide an answer to the question, are we alone? But back on Earth, more specifically South Africa, scientists have found extinct humans with small brains buried dead in carved caves. Jess Thompson's article was written for Newsweek World and appeared in the June 8, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. An extinct human species that lived around 300,000 years ago may have been more similar to us than scientists first thought. New research has found that this species, Homo naledi, buried their dead deliberately and carved symbols inside caves, marking the earliest recorded occurrences of these behaviors by at least 100,000 years. This behavior was previously only thought to be performed by Neanderthals and modern Homo sapiens. These findings were revealed in three preprints published in the preprint server BioRoxy by paleoanthropologist Lee Berger and his colleagues. Berger discovered the existence of this hominid species, Homo naledi, only 8 years prior, inside the Rising Star Cave system northwest of Johannesburg in South Africa. These human cousins are thought to have lived sometime between 241,000 and 335,000 years ago and have features distinct from our human species, including a brain only one-third the size of ours and a smaller body stature. Berger and his team have found evidence for deliberate burial, including 1,800 bone fragments inside an underground chamber, only accessible via a 7.5-inch wide slot, laid out in a seemingly careful way as opposed to being dumped. We found the cultural space of non-modern human species, Berger told National Geographic. These burial features meet evidentiary standards used for recognizing burials of H. sapiens. The recognition of burials in these chambers within the cave system prompts us to evaluate the broader array of H. naledi remains for evidence of mortuary activities, the authors wrote in the preprint titled Evidence for Deliberate Burial of the Dead by Homo naledi. Some have suggested that these bodies may have entered the cave by other means, being washed in by a flood or dragged in by a predator or even moved in later by Homo sapiens. However, no traces of gnaw marks were found, and the cave sediments revealed no signs of water deposition. They also found no traces of other human species. Some authors have argued that mortuary behavior is unlikely for H. naledi due to its small brain size. The evidence demonstrates that this complex cultural behavior was not as simple function of brain size, the authors wrote. While we cannot at this time exclude H. naledi as part of the ancestral makeup of humans, its overall morphology suggests that its common 380 ancestors with today's humans and Neanderthals go back more than a million years, maybe more. Now, in the second preprint, titled 241,000 to 330,000 35,000 years old rock engravings made by Homo naledi in the Rising Star Cave System, South Africa. The authors discuss how they also found markings on the cave's walls. These markings seem to have been erased and re-engraved, possibly indicating that they were made across a long period of time. In a third preprint, burials and engravings in a small-brained hominin, Homo naledi, from the late Pleistocene, context and evolutionary implications. The authors examine how and why these small-brained humans gained behaviors so similar to that of modern humans. It has been previously assumed that our more complex behaviors accumulated with our brain size. If Homo naledi did bury their dead and decorate cave walls, those findings challenge that assumption. Now, the association of these activities in subterranean spaces, accessed and modified by the small-brained species Homo naledi, impacts assertions that technological and cognitive advances in human evolution are associated solely with the evolution of larger brains, the authors wrote. The papers are still in preprint, however, so they're not yet published officially in a peer-reviewed journal. Now, Berger tells National Geographic they'll soon be published in the journal eLife, but they decided to go public before that point to keep the process transparent. Now, your readers will be able to watch as the authors our large team interact with interviewers and editors as part of the open process policy, Berger said. Effectively, we're letting people in to watch the review process and the way peer review works. So more is coming is what the whole thing indicates to me, and we'll be seeing probably more articles on that. Let's wind up today's Journey on Armchair Traveler with a short article by Charlotte Observer reporter Mark Price. A version of a Twilight Zone hides among rare rocks in North Carolina forests, how it got there. The article appeared in the October 18, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer, a sister newspaper of the Charlotte Observer and part of the McClatchy newspaper chain. And it starts with a mysterious version of a Twilight Zone exists in North Carolina, and the U.S. Forest Service has revealed its location just in time for Halloween, so this was done this past October. In Nantahala National Forest, about 150 miles northwest of Charlotte, is a place where the earth essentially has turned itself inside out, resulting in extreme conditions, according to an October 16th Facebook post. Now, it's a special area of rocks like peridotite and donite. These rocks are really rare because they're usually deep beneath the Earth's surface. They sit between the bottom of the ocean and the upper mantle, but here they've come up to the surface, the service reports. These rocks create a type of soil that lacks nutrients. Therefore, only plants that can handle extreme conditions are able to thrive. The result is a serpentine barren where you'll see two dozen plant and insect species rarely seen in North Carolina, including some found nowhere else in the world. The best-known part of the barrens in North Carolina is Buck Creek Serpentine Barren between the towns of Franklin and Hayesville. It covers about 300 acres from 3,400 feet elevation along Buck Creek to over 4,000 feet elevation atop Corundum Knob, the Forest Service says. So how did this netherworld sprout in North Carolina? Well, this happened about 400 million years ago when the Blue Ridge Mountains were forming, the Forest Service says. The collision of oceanic crust and continental crust pushed these rocks up. Similar islands of rock occur intermittently in an arc east of the Appalachian Mountains from Alabama to Maine, and most host similarly rare ecosystems, experts say. Isn't that interesting? By the way, Mark Price, the writer, has been a reporter for the Charlotte Observer since 1991. He covers beats that include schools, crime, immigration, LGBTQ issues, homelessness, and nonprofits. And we certainly appreciate his efforts here on this interesting story. And that brings us to the end of today's Journey of Armchair Traveler. We hope that you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That again is ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.